Greetings and welcome to Word Magazine. This is Jeff Riddle. I'm the pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. And in this episode of Word Magazine, I want to look at the topic of the 900,000 manuscripts of Mount Athos and the failure of the Reconstruction method. So I was recently listening to a podcast that I follow that is about new books in the field of academic studies, and in particular in the field of biblical studies. And I was listening to some of the podcasts and the archives, and I ran across an interview with a scholar about a book that she published a few years back. This was a scholar that I wasn't familiar with. It's a Jewish scholar. Her name is Malka Z. Simdevich. Or Simkovich, sorry. And at any rate, she was discussing her book, which was relatively new at the time that podcast was recorded, that's titled Discovering Second Temple Judaism. It's subtitled The Scriptures and Stories That Shaped Early Judaism. Again, that's Malka Z. Simkovich. This was published by the joint project of the University of Nebraska Press and the Jewish Publication Society, like I said, back in 2018. So she's talking about various sources for the study of Second Temple Judaism, or Hellenistic Judaism, I guess we could call it. And as part of that discussion, she made a passing reference to the large number of manuscripts that have been discovered that haven't yet been digitized and haven't yet been studied. And she made particular reference to a place called Mount Athos, which is in Greece, and about the large number of manuscripts there that have never been collated, never been digitized, never been studied. And so I wanted to read more about this. And so I got the book here through interlibrary loan. I didn't purchase it, but I got it through interlibrary loan through the college where I teach. And I was recently reading through some of it, and I read the second chapter in it, which discusses this issue, which you mentioned in the podcast. That chapter is titled Manuscripts and Monasteries. And in that chapter, she gives kind of a historical overview of some of the famous manuscript discoveries of the past in places like St. Catherine's Monastery at Mount Sinai in Egypt, where Tischendorf famously discovered, some would say stole, the Sinaiticus manuscript. She also talks about the large number of Slavonic monasteries and libraries that there are across Russia. And she talked about, she has a section in there about the Vatican Library and also about Mount Athos. And then she has a section where she talks about the number of monasteries that haven't been thoroughly examined in Ethiopia. This is on page 36. She says, thousands of churches and hundreds of monasteries throughout Ethiopia house ancient manuscripts. And she talks some about, in particular, about the book of First Enoch. And then she has an interesting discussion about some relatively recent discoveries in the 21st century in Afghanistan, of all places. And she has a discussion there of a cache of Jewish documents that were basically the holdings of a Jewish family in Afghanistan. That family was the Abu Nasser bin Daniel family. And only, I guess, in the early 2000s was this cache of manuscripts discovered that have some value for the study of early Judaism and also of the Old Testament. But she has a section within that chapter specifically about Mount Athos in Greece. If you're not familiar with Mount Athos, it's located on a remote isolated peninsula in northeastern Greece. And Mount Athos could be called the center of monasticism in Eastern Orthodoxy. It is said that there have been monks who have lived in the area around Mount Athos since the 4th century and maybe even as early as the 3rd century. There are today 20 monastery complexes. When you say there are 20 monasteries there, you're not talking about 20 singular buildings. Some of these monastic complexes, it is said, are the size of small cities. And this is an isolated place. It's physically isolated. It's also legally isolated. Greek law, contemporary modern Greek law, forbids easy access to this location. And in fact, only men can enter into the Mount Athos monastic collection or monastic areas. And so women are not allowed to enter. Several years ago, I remember there was a segment on the news program 60 Minutes. And one of the reporters, Bob Simon, did his segment on a visit to Mount Athos. And I remember watching it several years ago and really being intrigued by his visit there, his interviews with the monks, et cetera. And so I'll try to put a link, if I can, to that 60 Minutes interview. You can just search for it, 60 Minutes and Mount Athos, and it will come up. So actually, with respect to Mount Athos, not too far from where I live, about a 45-minute drive away between the towns of Lynchburg, Virginia, and Appomattox, Virginia, where Lee famously made his surrender to Grant. There's a little community, sort of, it's closer to Lynchburg, and there's a historical marker there. But there's an old antebellum plantation. I think it was built about the year 1800 by a man who was a friend of Thomas Jefferson. And that plantation was called Mount Athos. I think it's long since burned down. But there is still a historical marker, interestingly enough, where, as they seem to have done in the colonial and the early American days, to have named a lot of places after places in the ancient world. So anyways, back to Simkovich's book, she has this section on Mount Athos, and just let me read for you a little bit of what she says. We're going to get to this intriguing comment she makes about 900,000 manuscripts. So this is on page 30. She starts off the discussion. It's headed Scriptures in the Monastic Libraries of Mount Athos. She says, other monasteries in the lands bordering the Mediterranean Sea also house ancient manuscripts. One of the largest collections of Jewish texts can be found in a community of monasteries inhabiting the isolated Mount Athos Peninsula, a 30-mile-long stretch of land in northern Greece. Populated since ancient times, the peninsula is now home to some of the oldest Greek Orthodox monasteries worldwide. She continues, the largest and oldest of these is the Great Lavra Monastery, founded by Saint Athanasios, circa 920 to circa 1003. Those are the dates for Saint Athanasios. Sorry for my pronunciation problems. So it was built by him under his direction in 963 of the Common Era, or AD. She continues, over time, other monasteries were founded on the Holy Mountain, and thousands of manuscripts were collected and preserved in the monastery's libraries. But because access to the peninsula was so restricted, both by terrain and by policy, It took until the end of the 19th century for most manuscripts to be cataloged. The first catalog, a Greek book entitled Catalog of the Greek Manuscripts on Mount Athos, was published in the year 1895, and a second volume was published 5 years later. So that would have been presumably in 1900. Even then, she continues, however, there was no information about the manuscripts found in some of the Mount Athos libraries, such as those in the Great Lavra Monastery. Later catalogs, published in 1924 and 1925, fill in some of the gaps, but contemporary scholars do not view them as comprehensive because they exclude thousands of library titles written in Russian, Slavic, Bulgarian, and other languages. And so let me pause here. So she's saying there was an effort in the 19th century, beginning on into the early 20th century, to catalog some of the many manuscripts that are at Mount Athos. And I'm assuming from what she says that was primarily the Greek manuscripts. But she says that cataloging was not comprehensive. It didn't include all the monasteries. It also didn't include a lot of the books that were written in different languages, whether that was Russian, Slavic, or Bulgarian, or she says other languages. And I might just add, who knows if they were able to catalog all the Greek manuscripts? You wonder how many manuscripts are found exactly in among those 20 monastic communities that exist at Mount Athos. So at the very end of this discussion, this little part of the chapter on Mount Athos, she says this is page 34. She says, the precious manuscripts of Mount Athos will soon be available online to all people, male and female. She just had a previous discussion as a female Jewish scholar about how she thought it was so unjust that women were not allowed to go there. She continues, in 2014, the Secretary General of Telecommunications and the Hellenic Post Office of Greece, a man named Menelaus Daskalakis, having a hard time with these names, announced that efforts are underway to digitize all the manuscripts in the Mount Athos libraries, an initiative estimated to cost 8.5 million euros. And here's the last sentence that I found so intriguing, and this is what she made a reference to in that podcast. Officials estimate that once completed, more than 900,000 manuscripts will be digitized, as well as more than 146,000 pieces of art. And those pieces of art can be very important. Some of those are probably icons, paintings, maybe statuary to some degree, although I think that's less common among the Eastern Orthodox than it would be among the Roman Catholic monastic communities. But those are very important because those sometimes become interesting sources for biblical studies. I was thinking about the book by Canust and Wasserman on the woman taken in adultery passage, because they have a section in that book where they talk about some of these 4th century ivory jewelry boxes that have drawings on the outside of them of Christ meeting the Samaritan woman at the well from John 4, and then Christ forgiving the woman taken in adultery in John 7, 53 through 8, 11. So it's not a textual, but it's a physical artifact, artistic artifact that gives evidence of knowledge of the woman taken in adultery passage and places it also on an item that includes the a visual reference to another passage in the Gospel of John, showing that the account of the woman taken in adultery isn't some floating tradition, but it's in the Gospel of John. Here's the woman at the well, John 4. Here's the woman taken in adultery in John 8. So there are 146,000 pieces of art that they're saying that this project would hope to digitize. Now, again, she's writing this in 2018, and she says this effort to do this digitization was approved in 2014. And I'm not an expert in this, but I went online and I did a little bit of looking around to see what is the status of this digitization. And I've heard here and there a few reports on this, but I went and looked online. Let me share a couple of these things with you. Here is one page from this project that is so-called repository, this digital repository. You can see there's some kind of reference to the EU and to this being a project, also the Greek government from 2014 to 2020. And I'm not sure if that means that this project was funded through 2020. Now, she was writing in 2018. But this tells you a little bit about the project. It says the Holy Community of Mount Athos, with commitment and respect to the millenary spiritual and cultural tradition of the Athenite fathers, has decided to undertake new forms of action with the view to preserve and disseminate its cultural heritage. So they were saying they wanted to do this corresponding with the year 2000, so the second millennium second millennium mark of Christianity. The main purpose of this effort is to exploit modern information and communication technologies by digitalizing, documenting, and disseminating its cultural heritage. So they tell you a little bit about what they achieved. And it seems like they fell quite short of what Simkevich was talking about in 2018, but still they did a lot. They have an archive containing 200,000 documents, and there are approximately 3,300 manuscripts, parchment and or paper. There are also 1,512, if I can pronounce this correctly, incunabula, and those are early printed books. And then they have digitized some 22,000 objects, icons, religious objects, relics, etc. So that's a little bit about this digitization process. And here's another page also from the same site, the same project. And you can look at the collections that they have. And so here are various things that they have taken pictures of: coins, paintings, ceramics. And one of the categories is manuscripts. And let's just look at that for a second. So there are manuscripts that you can look up of various written documents. And there's a little description there at the top. Let's just read that. It says the monasteries of Mount Athos possess and manage the largest collection of Greek manuscript, it says codes, I'm assuming they mean codices, in the world. Approximately, this says 15,000. So 15,000 Greek manuscripts dating from the fourth. That's very early. I mean, that's earlier than the unsealed manuscripts are so prized by modern critics, up to, again, from the 4th to the 19th century. The manuscripts in parchment and paper preserved in Mount Athos cover a large thematic area, from religious subjects to scientific and philosophical treatises, decorated with priceless illuminations and decorations that render them works of art. So all these 15,000 in Greek are not parts of the Bible, but they cover all types of fields. The majority of the manuscripts preserved are written in the Greek language, which amount to more than 15,000. Furthermore, They're also a collection of Slavonic manuscripts, and they're talking about it's hard to see here. They're talking about what is held at Mount Athos, and not necessarily about everything that they've been able to digitize. Because if we go back to this, it says there are 3,300 manuscripts. That would apparently be out of 15,000 that they have. So the number that they've actually digitized is only partial. It talks about the fact that they have 100 late Georgian manuscripts. This says the manuscripts, I'm assuming it's referring to the Georgian manuscripts, date from the 10th to the early 20th century. So that's a little bit more about these manuscripts that are held at Mount Athos. Let me say this. There are other places that you can find online archives of some of the materials that are at Mount Athos. Here's another place where you can find a collection of digital images taken from Mount Athos. And this is from the United States Library of Congress. And you can see that. Let's see if we can expand it a little bit. It says the 20 monasteries which comprise historic and legendary, yet largely inaccessible monastic complex on Mount Athos in Greece house a rich collection. It says of over 11,000 manuscripts. In 1952 and 1953, the Library of Congress and the International Greek New Testament Project filmed the largest group of manuscripts in the history of Athos. It doesn't say the largest number of manuscripts that they have. It's the largest that had been recorded up to that time in the 1950s. It says this collection included 209 Greek and Georgian manuscripts of the Bible, along with some 44 apocryphal writings, as well as various documents on Byzantine music and letters. So I think there are also several other places online, if you were looking around, that you could find some of these digitized manuscripts from Mount Athos. But I want to go back again to Simcovich's statement. She's saying that there are many, many more manuscripts than 11,000 or 15,000. There are who knows how many. There's a mention there that these monastic communities are sometimes closed off to outsiders. So probably many of these collections have never really been gone through by Western scholars. Who knows what is sitting on the shelves in these libraries, monastic libraries at Mount Athos. And then beyond that, how many other types of manuscripts are there in monastic libraries in Russia, in monasteries that are either still functioning like St. Catherine's or ones that are buried in sand in Greece, in the hundreds, if not thousands, of places where manuscripts are held in Ethiopia, and what other undiscovered monastic libraries buried in sand or family collections like that one discovered in Afghanistan. How many more such documents are there? And again, I'm struck by that number she said of 900,000 manuscripts. Now, she was talking about versions, Russian and Slavonic and other things. But those can be very valuable also, right? Having early translations for understanding the history of the transmission of the text. And the point that I came away with after hearing her and then after reading this chapter alongside of just, I guess, the standing body of information that I have on this topic is that we don't have, or we have only a fragment probably of the extant manuscripts that would have some relevance for the study of the transmission history of the New Testament. We have probably only a fragment of the existing extant manuscripts in Greek or in early translations. And that's just talking about the extant manuscripts. Then you think about the fact that there were thousands of manuscripts, if not hundreds of thousands of manuscripts of the Greek New Testament, for example, and early versions, early translations of it, that were destroyed during times of persecution, like in the Diocletian persecution, the Great Persecution from 303 to 313 in the Roman Empire. And there have been thousands, hundreds of thousands of such manuscripts that have wasted away through constant usage or, you know, simply wearing out or being damaged by fire or by flood, etc. And so we have, I think, again, only a fragment of the currently extant manuscripts, and we have even a smaller fragment of all the manuscripts that have ever existed in the history of the transmission of the New Testament text. Sometimes when you listen to modern scholars who are committed to the so-called reconstruction method, where they're going to use so-called the art and science of textual criticism, and they're going to assemble all the empirical evidence that they have and say, let's restore the text. What this chapter in this book reminded me of is the fact that the reconstruction method has inherent weaknesses. It has an Achilles heel, and that is we can't assemble, even right now, the evidence of all the extant manuscripts. Who knows what's at Mount Athos and in other places? We certainly can't pull back from the historical past these ones that have been lost. And this undermines, I think, the whole reconstruction method. Whether you're someone who holds to modern reasoned eclecticism, or you're somebody who holds to the so-called majority text. Pray tell me, how do you know what the majority text is? You're saying the majority text of the extant manuscripts that you can presently identify. But you would have to admit that you don't know how many extant manuscripts there are, or how many extant manuscripts have been lost. And so there's no way reasonably to determine what the majority text is using empirical methodology. And there's no way using reasoned eclecticism to reconstruct the text, because you don't have enough information. You have inadequate information. Modern scholars talk these days about the embarrassment of riches that they have, and they'll give the estimate that we have 5,000 New Testament manuscripts. Of course, the earliest of those are generally the papyri that are highly fragmentary, only a verse or two, a passage or two, a page or two. When we have a whole book of the Bible or a whole copy of the New Testament, that's generally coming from much later manuscripts. So we have very few early manuscripts with which to try to reconstruct what the supposed early text of the New Testament was. And so again, this just shows, I think, the inherent weaknesses in general of textual criticism, of modern textual criticism, whether, again, it involves using reasoned eclecticism or whether it involves choosing the so-called majority text method, the Byzantine priority method. Both of those texts must, of necessity, say that the text that they have is only provisional and that it might change based on the discovery of supposedly newer and better evidence. And so this group, those two groups, modern eclecticism and Byzantine priority majority text, say that our text is only provisional. We cannot say with any measure of certainty exactly what the Bible is. We can only say what we think it looks like approximately based on the extant evidence that we have. And this probably won't surprise you. What this reinforces for me is that the Reformation text position or the confessional text position, the traditional Protestant text view, is a superior view, a superior approach. It's the only approach that says we have a text that is stable. We have a text that is assured. Why? Because it is not based on restoration, but it's based on providential preservation. It's really the Reformation text view, the confessional text view, is really the only position that can say with confidence, look, here is the Bible, and here is what the Bible says. And so for those reasons, I think it is a far superior position, and it's not going to be swayed by the digitization of 900,000 manuscripts at Mount Athos. We have the Word of God. It has been preserved by God, and it has been kept pure in all ages. Well, with that, I'm going to bring this episode to a conclusion. I hope this has been helpful for those who are listening and edifying. I'll look forward to speaking to you in the next Word Magazine. Till then, take care, and may the Lord richly bless you.